Irrational thinking produces poor physical outcomes and health outcomes because irrational thinking tries to deviate from the plan and purpose of your existence, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And the more you deviate from that, the worse the outcomes are in your life.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you grow in your faith. We want you to grow strong in your faith in a time where the world wants you to be weak, and one of the best ways we can do that is to coach you up. We're here to challenge you, to teach you how to think for yourself so that you can be strong in your faith and go out with confidence into the world. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the Salty Pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Welcome, everybody. It is so good to be with you again. I am really enjoying this series that we're in right now. I love the fact that it is stirring the pot ever so slightly, and we're getting more engagement. We're continuing to grow as a podcast and as a ministry. Love for you to be a part of it. You could go over to our YouTube channel, and you can like and subscribe, even if you listen to it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, just hit that thumbs up or five stars or whatever it is.
Leave a comment, whatever.
Leave a comment. Just that, you know, all of that helps it grow. And what it does is more people discover it when they search for things. So we just want to be out there and continue to expand because we believe that what we're doing is help building the kingdom of God. And that's what it's all about. So it's about clear thinking. It's about reasonable understanding of your faith, why you believe what you believe, and you know the basis and foundation for it. And the other thing it does, my hope is that this podcast helps you become a stronger person so that people who might be against you or insult your faith or criticize things, and you're able to say, yeah, that's just not true, and I know why. So I just want you to be a stronger person. So that's what I think the Salty Pastor Podcast is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's cool about this particular series is we're kind of getting some engagement from people who don't normally listen. And
yeah.
We've got some internet atheists reaching out to the Salty Pastor, and they're helping grow our engagement numbers. So we thank you them for interacting
thanks,
with
guys.
Us because
appreciate that.
Google and YouTube view that as a good thing, even if it's not what you think it is. So we appreciate that. But I want to talk about why you think this topic is getting people so riled up to the point where they're leaving comments?
Well, I think the point of our current focus is to determine whether belief in God is a rational endeavor or is it an irrational endeavor. So what's kind of the difference between those two? And, you know, first of all, rational thought or rationality is considered in the notion of I'm going to use my cognitive function of my brain primarily through logic and facts that are confirmable to form reasonable conclusions about the world in which we live. So rationality is a process of thinking that helps you draw accurate conclusions to the world in which you live. Irrationality is the rejection of logic. It is the rejection of the cognitive functions of the brain, or the belief that you can come to a reasonable and accurate conclusion, sometimes called objective truth, about the world and the world in which we live. But I see that as a contradiction. How can you come to an objective truth, a reasonable conclusion about the world in which we live, by rejecting logic in our cognitive functions? Right? That's irrationality. So most of what you see happening in the world today, I think, particularly our own society, is due to postmodernism. You know, I've said this many times, postmodern deconstructionism.
If you're filling out your Salty Pastor bingo card, this is one tick on that.
Yeah, the one tick on that. You hear it often. And so what's interesting is that postmodernism is a philosophical way of seeing the world, and at its core, it says, well, there's really no objective truth. There's no reasonable conclusion that everybody can agree on. that's an impossible goal. It just doesn't exist. So in essence, what it is at its core, it's an attempt to make everybody think irrationally, not rationally. And that's what I find so interesting. Logic is irrelevant. It's what you feel and what you want that's of primary consideration. Perfect example of this is the current transgender ideology. Even though biologically you are a male, biologically, you know, you're even in society raised as a male, if you believe you're a female, then society is required to affirm your truth as being true. And then this has to be applied across the board. So if you want to compete on a girls' sports team, then you have to be allowed to do that. Well, see, that of course, is pure irrational. It's not real, and it's not an accurate conclusion about the reality in which we live. Because, you know, a male grows up, lives as a male, develops as a male, and then in college says, well, I want to now become a female, and they say, take a year off, and then you can compete with females. That's totally irrational because the bone structure, the bone density of that male, the muscle mass of that male far succeeds that of a female. And there's no drugs or hormones you can give that male for 1 year that's going to equalize the effects of the difference between male and female. And that's why these males who compete in female sports are shattering records, you see, and that's just an erasure of the significance and value of women. And so I think that we're going to have more irrationality in our society, less rational thinking and conclusions about the world in which we live in, simply because what we've decided to do is say that belief in God is irrational. And that, of course, is the crux of all of this. It's the linchpin that has cascaded us down this cliff into this insanity abyss where people come up with the craziest things. And we're supposed to sit there and say, oh, this makes perfect sense, when it makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is just there. This is presenting itself in a numerous
correct
areas of our lives these days, to the point where you hear people kind of say, well, I just don't trust the media, I don't trust science. And it's like, well, that feels innately like, well, why wouldn't you? Like, they are people who are researching and doing all these things. And I think the problem is they are doing these research, but they're choosing how they present them, right? Like,
right,
stats are always presented in a specific way. I mean, and those stats don't always represent what's accurate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to really logically learn how to think for yourself and walk through the process of what's being presented to me, and it's not saying don't listen to the media, it's just think through what they're saying so that you're not going, oh, I'm just blindly trusting anything they say.
Yep.
You're instead going, well, okay, I understand your premise. I understand what you're saying. I'm going to do some research. I'm going to think this through, and that helps me come to a conclusion that may agree with you or may not, but at least I'm informed in the process and not just going, well, yep, they said it on the TV, so it must be true.
Well, do you see a lot of irrational conclusions being made in your peer group? I mean, what irrational thinking produces, let's be very clear about this. Irrational thinking produces mental health problems. Irrational thinking produces less quality of life. Irrational thinking produces poor physical outcomes and health outcomes, because irrational thinking tries to deviate from the plan and purpose of your existence, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And the more you deviate from that, the worse the outcomes are in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I think in my peer group, probably, especially when I was traveling, I had a lot of liberal friends, and a lot of them didn't believe in God. They were very entrenched in this transgender LGBTQ affirmation and support system, right? And
correct,
it's like, there's not a lot of, like, let's walk this out past the original thought process of, hey, these people don't want to feel persecuted, so we shouldn't persecute them. And it's like, yes, that is a rational thought. We should not persecute people, especially as Christians. We're called to love them. I can get on board on that. The problem is, well, this leads to this.
Yeah.
And then leads to this, and leads to this. But they don't see that far. And if you try to bring that up to them, it's, no, you're just being,
you're
now being irrational. It's like, no, I'm actually going down a logical, rational tree structure. You're going off into the clouds and don't care.
Because then, you know, you initially get on board. Well, I don't believe in persecuting anybody.
Right.
I mean, that's an axiomatic truth. And then what they say, well, if you don't agree with what they say, that's persecution. If you don't affirm what they believe, that's persecution. And you're like, no, that seems pretty irrational to me.
Right.
And one of the things I love about investigating these proofs is that it helps us think more rationally. They not only show that a rational and logical conclusion that God is real, they also reveal the importance of cognitive and rational thought in all these other areas of my life. You know, one of the things is that I know a lot of young people are struggling with finding a relationship or the love of their life. And it's like, well, have you ever thought that maybe if you thought more rationally about it, that would become a greater probability in your life?
I mean, I've got a guy friend that comes to mind, and he keeps basically going on these Tinder dates and all these things. He keeps hooking up with all these women, and then he complains that he can't find someone of quality that he wants to be married in his heart. Like, he wants to
settle down. Yeah, and he talks
down.
About it, says it's a goal.
And it's a goal, but then I'm like, bro, you haven't changed the way you're trying to find this.
Yeah.
In the 35 years you've been alive, maybe you need to readjust your strategy.
You're out bass fishing and there's no bass in that pond.
And he kind of just laughs it off. And I'm like, no, but like, really, like, you gotta think through this, bro. Yeah. Like, and I mean, it's not a hard process, but there's a initial hump you have to get over of going, well, maybe I'm not as logical or as rational as I think I am, right? Like, that's a hard thing to admit. And and you don't want to downplay that for when you're trying to speak to other people about your faith or about why God might be real. There's an initial large, overwhelming tidal wave of people, like scientists that have gone on TV and school textbooks and all these things that have told them one thing, and now you're coming with the truth and new information, but they're still... marching an uphill battle, so you can't just be like, oh, I'm just going to go drop this truth bomb on them, and they just will have to accept it, right? Like, going from illogical to logical isn't just as simple as just flipping a switch for a lot of people.
It is not, you know. And, you know, this argument that we started on Tuesday is the fine-tuning of the universe, and we kind of broke it down, and it causes me to begin to think that my life needs to be more finely tuned. And that is, it's so interesting, is that rational thinking says, I'm not going to leave things up to chance, because what you realize is chance is not your friend.
The casino says that every single day.
chance is not your friend, because what you don't realize is that if you aren't trying to gauge your life, if you're not trying to tune your life, if you're not directing your life, the chance isn't, well, I'll get one of two great options. Chance is a ordered life or a chaotic life, a loving life or a confused, upside down, broken heart life. And so that's what a lot of people is that chance, meaning there's two great options, you know, and I'll, you know, flip a coin and get one or the other, is a myth. It's a deception. And because irrational thinking tells you that, your emotions tell you that. Cognitive thinking says, I need to fine tune my life. And that's why I love this argument, this proof, because it helps me realize, man, that my life, right? I am a uniquely fine thread that is being woven in the tapestry of God's will for this entire universe, that my life has a point because it has a place and it has a purpose. I may not even know why I exist, but that doesn't negate the fact that I am still special and unique and a thread, however small, it's being woven into this thing that we call the universe. And so it seems like a pretty big deal to me, especially when you consider whether or not your life has any value or meaning to it. And the fine-tuning argument does that. See, The thing about a proof is, at first it seems very abstract. Oh, okay, so you can prove God exists through the fine-tuning. It starts with just a rational, is it true or not true, right?
Right.
But what we don't understand is that the more rational proofs that we adopt, guess what happens? The more the downstream of our life starts to become so much better, because we're drinking from a wellspring of pure water, not water that's tainted with all this bad bacteria in it that's constantly making us sick. The fine-tuning argument is the basis for rational, fine-tuned thought in every other area of my life. One of the things that about people, everyone who follows Jesus has to put up with, is the constant ridicule of people who bring stupid arguments to insult your faith. And so, you know, in our time left, I want to kind of show examples of how irrational so many people are under the guise that they're supposedly more intellectual because they're more successful than you are. And I just want to just point out how irrational they really are.
Yeah, I think let's start off with the first clip that you brought today, and we'll watch through that, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
Because atheism is only rejecting the claim that there is a God. Atheism isn't a belief system. Mm-hmm. So this is atheism in a nutshell. You say there's a God. I say, can you prove that? You say no. I say, I don't believe you then. Mm-hmm. So you believe in one God, I assume.
In three persons, but go ahead.
Okay, so you believe. Okay, mm-hmm. So there are about 3,000 to choose from that have been, you know, people who believe in.
I've done some reading, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So basically, you believe in you deny one less God than I do. You don't believe in 2,999 gods, uh-huh. And I don't believe in just one more.
Right.
We'll see. It's a play on words is what he's doing, and unless you spend 5 seconds thinking about it, it can convince you, right?
Which, I mean, late night television is not meant to be thought
yes,
through
that's true.
More than 5 seconds.
You know, but that's why what's so important about it is that you can enjoy late night television, you can enjoy people who have vastly different political leanings or ideologies than you if they're just funny. Right? Because I can watch Ricky Gervais and see some of his work, and I laugh and have a great time, right? But how can I do that without being influenced in a negative way? Because I know exactly what I believe and why I believe it. And I also know that when he talks about these things, he is irrational. That's really a nice way of saying he's an idiot. You know?
There's some salt.
The bottom line is this. Just real quick lesson for you is that if you're in a situation and you ever hear somebody say something and you're like, that doesn't sound right to me, there's only three ways that a postulate or a declarative statement or an idea or an opinion that a person renders can be wrong. There's only three ways.
Okay.
And so you just run it through this really quick filter, and that is, okay, is there any unclear definitions or words here? Absolutely. Okay. His comparison between there's 3,000 gods and there's, I believe in, you know, you believe in one, and I
deny
all
of them.
All of them. So that we're not that different. Well, what that is a lack of clarification on the definition of gods, right?
Right.
Number two, false premise. Is it based on a false premise? This is an assumption being made that are unspoken. In this situation, he is making an assumption that is completely false. And what he's saying, and he won't do, is he says, look, is that I believe in, you know, no gods, you believe in one, and deny 2,999. Well, the assumption is that the arguments for all those gods are equal.
Right.
That's what you say, is equal. And
that you could
not.
Swap any of them in for the one that you believe in, and you're doing the exact same thing, right?
Yeah.
Is the assumption he's making.
Yeah, and the other thing he's also saying is that the bottom line is when you add up all the monotheistic religions, it says there's only one God. That represents about 5 billion people in the world. And there's only one place where there's additional gods, and this is where the 3,000 number comes from, is all in India. It's in Hinduism,
right.
Okay? And so you pull that out. And so what he's saying is basically is that, well, I guess I'm smarter than, you know, 5 billion other people. And I go, well, I might like to think I'm smarter than a lot of people, but
Not everybody.
The probability is getting up there pretty high. So you have to say to yourself, maybe my assumption that all gods are the evidence for all these gods is equal
right.
when it is not. And then the third problem in any argument is bad logic. And that's where you make this leap. And the biggest leap here is that, well, I deny the existence of 3,000 gods. You accept the existence of one. So I just deny one more than you. Okay, but that is a leap in logic bigger than the Grand Canyon when you actually think about it. Because, no, what you're doing is you're making a logical argument that all gods don't exist. And so basically the argument of what he says is he's assuming that all proofs for a god or any god are equally the same. They are not. And that's intellectually dishonest to say that they are. That is an irrational statement. Number two, he says, well, you can't prove there is a god. That's false. Yes, you can. Now, you may reject the proof or the conclusions, but the notion to say you can't prove it and you can't rationally prove it is absolutely and unequivocally false. And there's a lot of people who are a whole lot smarter than him, physicists, cosmologists, mathematicians, who've all come to say the evidence for the existence of God is off the chart.
Well, and we're almost also seeing the inability for them to prove there isn't one, right? Like, that's the, we're also seeing that in.
Well, there's less evidence that there isn't one
right.
than there is.
Yeah. Like, the, if you were to pull it into kind of a court case, it's
yeah.
like, if you're saying, hey, there's a God, show me that there isn't one, they've not found any real evidence that counteracts that, right? In fact, most of the evidence points to the
to God,
that,
yes. Yeah. So, especially with all the proofs. And so what a lot of people who are unsophisticated do is they go, well, you can't prove it either way. Well, that's false as well. Okay. The question isn't what can you prove? The question is there any proof? Right? Is there any proof? Well, then let's check it out and see. All right. We have extremely good and powerful reasons for what we believe. And you have good and powerful reasons for what you don't believe. And furthermore, what we believe, these beliefs, when we ask the question, well, what is the proof, have been formed, tested, refined, and strengthened for over 2,000 years. They continue to stand the test of time, the challenges, and all the new discoveries and information that come out. Atheism isn't even 175 years old, this form of it now, scientific materialism. And it's getting weaker and weaker as time goes by. And you know why? Because of scientific discovery. It's not getting stronger because of scientific discovery. It's getting weaker. And that's important to know.
Yeah, I think let's kind of continue down this process where a lot of the people that we see, like, I mean, Ricky Gervais is a comedian, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know specifically on Stephen Colbert brings Neil deGrasse Tyson on, like, all the time, right?
All the
like,
time.
They're BFFs, and Neil deGrasse Tyson will pretty consistently basically try to bring up reasons why God isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a lot of scientists that get pulled into these different shows or whatever to basically speak against why God isn't real, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so why is it that all of these scientists that they find that are supposed to be the most rational people seem to be bringing in the most illogical, irrational arguments?
Well,
I call it
the halo effect.
Okay.
You know, and my son, my older son, Zach, has talked about this quite. He says, if you think you're smart in a specialty, which a lot of people are, you can be very refined in a specific specialty, it gives you the assumption or belief that you're smart in everything else when you aren't. Okay, and that's a perfect example. His work on astrophysics, you know, he is a PhD astrophysicist, and I like his work and some of the stuff that he talks about. I like the way he communicates about it. It's great, but he kind of turns stupid when he starts to talk about God, and
okay.
Here's a perfect example. Let's listen to this.
Do you give people who make this case that that was the beginning and that there had to be something provoke the beginning? Do you give them an A at least for trying to reconcile faith and reason?
I don't think they're reconcilable.
What do you mean?
Well, so let me say that differently. All efforts that have been invested by brilliant people of the past have failed at that exercise. They just fail. And so I don't, the track record is so poor that going forward, I have essentially zero confidence, near zero confidence, that there will be fruitful things to emerge from the effort to reconcile.
Before you respond, what do you think the probability is that he's read Where the Conflict Really Lies by Alvin Plantinga?
Zero. I mean, it's very, very clear that Dr. Tyson is not well read in this area. He's just sharing his opinion. And that's evident in the way the question is framed. Faith and reason, are they reconcilable? Those are such general terms as to be meaningless. What in the world is even meant by faith and reason? And yet he thinks they're irreconcilable. Now, what he goes on to talk about is the opening chapter of Genesis. That is apparently what he thinks he means by faith, and that all efforts to reconcile that with science have failed. Now, there's a lot to be said about this. As the interviewer suggested, the idea that the universe had a beginning at some point in the finite past and was created by God, as Genesis declares, is fully reconcilable with modern astrophysical cosmology, which also posits an absolute origin to the universe about 13.8 billion years ago. Also, the fine-tuning of the universe is consistent with the biblical affirmation that it's God who is the ultimate creator of the universe and all of its biological life forms. The extraordinary applicability of mathematics that we've talked about on previous Capturing Christianities is also completely reconcilable and compatible with a religious perspective on creation, such as you have in Genesis 1. So it's demonstrably false that faith and modern science cannot be reconciled, as the way Dr. Tyson says.
Dr. William Lane Craig points out that Neil deGrasse Tyson, whom he says he likes and has an affection for, is just simply wrong, because the work of reconciliation of faith and science is happening because of the fine-tuning argument, the proof that we are talking about in this week in particular.
Yeah, I think he just so quickly captures why there's such a breakdown in this argument, and the fact that it is so easy to really think through this and be like, oh, actually, this is rational, this is reconcilable. And I love that clip. It was so good. So
yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I think that is happening out there, and it's something that we have to overcome, is the overt bigotry by so many so-called intellectuals towards rational arguments for God. I don't mind disagreements at all. I don't mind criticism at all. What I do mind is the overt attempt to misrepresent the position. This is called a straw man argument. You say, this is what these people believe, and then you argue against the false representation of the position. This happens a lot in the pro-choice debate, and that is a lot of feminists say that pro-life people hate women, and they want women to be subjugated, and that's completely false, right? It has nothing to do with the subjugation of women. It has absolutely nothing to do with a hatred of women. It's actually a love for women. Because one of the facts is this, particularly in China, is that if you're a female, you had a massive higher percentage rate of being aborted than if you were a male. And so it was like, no, it's a love of females because we want more of them.
Right.
Right. And so, okay, if you want to argue against a position, then you should have the intellectual honesty to represent their position accurately. Okay, here's another perfect example of Neil deGrasse Tyson using a straw man argument. In other words, he's saying that this is their position when actually it's not. But listen.
Going pretty quickly through these, so that's great. Here we go.
They're not
if
very
you knew nothing about science and you read, say, the Bible, the Old Testament, which in Genesis is an account of nature. That's what that is. And I said to you, give me your description of the natural world based only on this. You would say the world was created in 6 days and that stars are just little points of light, much lesser than the sun. And in fact, they can fall out of the sky. right? Because that's what happens during the revelation. One of the signs that the second coming is that the stars will fall out of the sky and land on earth. So to even write that means you don't know what those things are. Everybody who tried to make proclamations about the physical universe based on Bible passages got the wrong answer. So what happened was, when science discovers things and you want to stay religious or you want to continue to believe that the Bible is unerring, what you would do is you would say, well, let me go back to the Bible and reinterpret it. Then you'd say things like, oh, they didn't really mean that literally, they meant that figuratively.
There's so much to say about this. For one thing, notice the confusion between Genesis 1 and the book of Revelation. Genesis 1 says nothing about the stars falling from the sky. That's from a work of apocalyptic literature employing lots of symbolism.
Hundreds of years later.
Yeah, right. So he's just confused there. Now, when you get to Genesis 1, as I said, the purpose of Genesis 1 is not to give an account of nature. It is not a science book. The purpose of Genesis 1 is to show that the things that exist in the world are just creatures rather than deities to be worshipped and served. That God is the transcendent creator and designer of everything that exists. And honestly, if you read Genesis 1, it really gives you a very logical order of creation, beginning with darkness and then a primordial sea, the emergence of dry land, and then vegetation and animals, and finally man as the very last, the crown of creation on earth. It's not grossly unscientific in the way many Mesopotamian myths were. It's quite astonishing.
One of the things that I think that is really significant about this clip is how Dr. Craig, you know, he just really quickly refutes the straw man argument of Neil deGrasse Tyson. And what I really think is interesting is his statement was this, is that everybody who made a claim about the natural world based on a Bible passage was just flat out wrong. So obviously then, based on his statement, he disagrees with Galileo, because Galileo is a perfect example of how the scripture was used in order to help him discover.
Right. And
now, how do I know that? Am I making a salacious claim about Galileo? Well, no, it's in his own words, because when he said that the earth and these other bodies revolve around the sun, he wrote a letter to Benedetto Castelli, and this is what he wrote in his letter. I quote, "In regard to the first general point of the Most Serene Ladyship, it seems to me very prudent of her to propose and of you to concede and to agree that the Holy Scripture can never lie or err, and that its declarations are absolutely and inviolably true."
Mm.
So Galileo's entire defense for why he was right was based on the scriptures.
Mm.
And he makes that's a whole argument. He says, look, the Ptolemies at the time, this was the people who said that everything revolves around the earth. It was from Ptolemy, not from the Bible. It was from the Ptolemies, who followed the Ptolemaic philosophy. He said, you're not interpreting the scriptures properly, because the scriptures attest to a solar system that rotates around the sun. And so that's what Galileo himself made this argument, which is an exact contradiction to what Neil deGrasse Tyson just stated.
Yeah, I think it's cool to be able to pull those things out and go, hey, just because you know more in certain areas today doesn't mean that you know everything, right?
And that's correct.
And Galileo was a pretty smart guy, and it influenced everything that you now get to work on.
Yeah.
So you should maybe listen up a little bit.
Yeah, he's the rock star of astrophysicists.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
No, I think the fine-tuning argument shows not only that God is real and necessary possibility, it also shows how the current thinking needs to be just as refined. We need to take this that proves God existence and then weave it into our downstream thinking of everyday life. And, you know, it culminates in Psalms chapter 19, verse 1. The heavens tell the glory of the Lord, and their expanse declares the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals its knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to apply that to everyday living.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Pastor, for sharing this proof with us this week. I think, like I said, this one's a little more concrete and easy to understand in some ways, or at least attempt to grasp at in some ways.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be great to hear you talk more about it on Sunday here at Foothills in your message. Thank you guys for joining us here on the Salty Pastor Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Keep thinking for yourself.